Welcome to San Diego Newsfix, The Backstory, where we tackle important questions about journalism ethics and give you a behind-the-scenes look at our industry and our newsroom. I'm Luis Cruz. Today, we're talking about the Union Tribune's Community Voices Project. It's an online platform for civil discourse. It brings dozens of thought leaders together with the goal of sharing diverse points of view to move toward a stronger, more inclusive San Diego region. Joining us now to discuss the Community Voices Project is Union Tribune Editorial and Opinion Director, Matthew T. Hall, Deputy Editorial and Opinion Editor, Laura Castañeda, Managing Editor, Laura Sacalo, and we begin with publisher and editor, Jeff Light. Jeff?
Yeah, thank you, Luis. Let's jump right in. This is one of my favorite topics because it's one of the most important things we do, in my opinion. So I might be jumping in with all sorts of questions. But Matthew, why don't you just start us off with what is the Community Voices Project? How long we've been doing it? Why did we start it?
Yeah, I, like you, agree it's one of the most important things that our team does, the opinion team does. And one of the reasons that it was born is because one of my great frustrations when I took over as head of the opinion team in 2016, the opinion page is exactly what it has been for decades, for centuries, right? Which is we largely tell people how long they can write, when they write, how frequently they write, what subjects they tackle. We're the ones soliciting subjects, and that's not the way to have a conversation, right? So, a couple of years after I came on board, Jeff, you and I started having conversations about how to bring more voices to the table, how to amplify voices, particularly marginalized voices. And so what we did was we launched the Community Voices Project almost 3 years ago to the day. We began it in May 2020. Featured dozens of writers, and we tried to get a great diversity of writers all over San Diego geographically, diverse in terms of race and gender and identity, in terms of political persuasion, in terms of what they did for livings. And instead of saying you can write an essay of 750 words every 3 months on subject X, we said you can write about anything you want at any length, at any time. And the idea, again, was to start broader conversations, to let people tell their own stories, and to really be able to understand our neighbors. And I think we had great success, especially at the beginning. People wrote frequently, and we published their essays mostly online, sometimes in the paper, and had really, really powerful conversations about any number of subjects. In recent times, the frequency with which writers are producing essays has downshifted, shall we say. And so Laura and I were trying to reboot it now. And in recent months, we've invited more folks. We've asked folks who haven't been writing as much or at all if they want to give a seat to someone who, you know, is on a long waiting list that we've had. And so we're trying to reboot it now and also having great success in the two main areas we're trying to find more people in are young voices and conservative voices, both of which we've had in the past, but maybe have been underrepresented in the group. And so as we look to bring in more folks at the current time, we're also focusing in on those two key areas.
Let me bring Laura Castañeda in, because Laura, you're the one with your hands on this on a every hour basis. And, I think I've shared before, as I go through that work every week, I'm just always amazed at the amazing stories and the surprises and the insights and the emotion. And, I just think it's a fantastic project. Tell us a little bit about what it's like making that happen. How do you find these people? What is the work of finding and encouraging this kind of storytelling?
There is no one answer, Jeff. It comes from so many places. This project is brilliant. And you came up with this before I came on board, so I will take no credit. But to be, you know, sometimes we receive essays, right? Like we get dozens every single day that just come in that we don't even ask for. But every once in a while, a writer will catch our attention because it's a younger person or they're just writing about something. Like I would say to myself, I've been in San Diego for 20 something years and I didn't know that. I've never heard of that, which means that that person is in tune to a community or a circle of people or something that we obviously don't know about. So they're like the boots on the ground. They're the eyes and ears in the community. And they're very passionate about the subjects that they want to write about. So I think, you know, sometimes they come from those non-solicited essays where like, you know, we just added a woman that is a psychiatrist or a psychologist. Don't quote me on that. I can't remember. But she lives in Bonita and she is Jewish and she just has all of these amazing different pockets in life where she wrote her little bio. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, she can write on a multitude of subjects, you know. So they don't necessarily have to be people that are, you know, have a really high community leading type of title in our community. But, you know, they're bringing something to the table that we obviously don't know about and should be sharing with the community at large. And I think that's the beauty of this. You know, there's not just one place we're finding our community voices people. They're coming from all over the place and even recommendations from those who have decided that they don't have the time or they're ready to kind of move on, but they've recommended other people.
Huh. Okay. So like, yeah, now we're sort of getting to the brass tacks here. How do you decide who gets to be in that club?
A lot of talking. I'll let Matt take that one.
Yeah. Cause I know you two are working on this right now, right? Like figuring out what other voices to enroll.
Yeah. I mean, our criteria is pretty broad, expansive, kind of intentionally so. We want people with a passion to speak out, with experiences that they are willing to share, know their communities, however they define their communities, is able to write on a regular basis, is willing to undergo what can be a rigorous editing process. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we want these things, they're opinion-based, but they also need to be fact-based too, because this is journalism after all. And I think this is key too, that they disclose any potential conflicts of interest, right? So as we were going through this reboot, we looked at our last set of criteria and we upgraded it to account for that possible conflicts of interest, right? Because journalism is only as good as the people who trust it. And this is not, one of the things this is not, is a forum for endorsements, for overtly political statements by people in office or who work for politicians or who are members of the Democratic or Republican Party. So, we kind of look at those criteria and then look at the group, which is on our website. And you can, you know, Google Community Voices Project Union Tribune, and you'll see the dozens of folks who are writing for us currently. And, so we look at that group and see which holes we have. And that, like I said earlier, young voices and conservative voices had been some of the ones where we thought we needed some more representation. And I think we've got a lot of young voices now too, and we're bringing in more conservative voices. So it really, there's no magic to it. And it is a little subjective to be honest. It's not really about checking boxes, but about trying to have a really thoughtful conversation and importantly, a way to disagree agreeably, you know, which I think is a big part of it too.
And how big is this group? How many people?
I think right now it's about 50 to 60. And the idea is we want to expand it. It can't get super huge because there's limited staff to have it. And right now, Laura, I, Tanya Navarro edit the pieces, and sometimes other teammates have an eye on it as well. So we're kind of limited to a certain extent by all the stuff we do and are able to do. But our goal is to publish essays the week that they come in, so that there's always something for people to read in that section.
So let's talk about this from an industry perspective, Matt. You just before we got on, we were chatting about this. I feel like I see, two different trends in the industry. One, toward embracing and centering more voices like you are here. And then another that is cautious about which voices are included in an age of rising propaganda and maybe also rising political orthodoxy, maybe on both sides, where people are, you know, feeling like, is it responsible to hear all voices? Tell me a little bit about, you know, your industry view here. What you see from peers, et cetera.
The timing on this is interesting because I just got back from Austin last week, where there were, you know, about 60 opinion journalism leaders from all over the country. American Press Institute brought us together for a two-day opinion journalism summit. And one of my key takeaways there was this notion that we're all trying to exist in the tension, which was a phrase that someone had, and it kind of illustrates what you're talking about, which is we are trying to amplify more voices, but we're so divided that depending on which side of the political aisle you're on, you may not think that some of those voices deserve to have a seat at the table, right? And so the other big takeaway I had, or one of the other big takeaways I had from this summit, was the notion that at its heart, at its core, opinion journalism is really trying to figure out how we all live better lives, govern ourselves better. And with that in mind, the idea is not to change people's views, but to change people's views of each other. Meaning, if we're all trying to understand one another, that's where that focus should be. And that's really the idea at the heart of the Community Voices Project. And I think what you're starting to see nationally is more people embrace that, more people trying to figure out how to have those discussions. I think 3 years ago, we were kind of at the forefront, but I think there's more people interested in this and pursuing it. And now we're trying to figure out and having to have discussions about the business of journalism. One thing I'll note is that all of these essays are in front of the Union Tribune's pretty restrictive paywall. So they're free and accessible to everyone, which I think is, you know, essential. One of the things, we're not paying these writers, we're providing them a platform. But we're also not, it's not behind, these essays aren't behind our paywall, right? So we're not trying to profit off other people's stories. And I think that's important too, because I keep talking about this summit, but there were so many amazing people there and amazing thoughts that emerged from it. One of which was this notion of extracting stories from a community. Like, journalism is very famous for being extractors. We're going to swoop in, we're going to talk to you for an hour, we're going to put 10 words of what you told us in quote in our much longer, broader story. And that's an extraction, right? That's a transaction. And the beauty of the CVP is that it's not transactional. We really are trying to listen to what people are saying, not just as editors, but as a community. And that is, I think, the ultimate goal of this, right? That we have our understanding, that other outlets are understanding, is that the question to ask yourself at the end of each story that you read is, what did you learn from it, from hearing another perspective? You know, and I think that's some self-reflection and some community reflection is really the point of this, and why other outlets are seeing a value and more outlets are doing it.
Yeah, that's a very interesting dynamic, because yes, I want to control my story on my terms and tell it in my own voice. And when I talk to a journalist, my story is framed into the construct that journalist thinks is right. And my words are selected and the context is shaped in a way that I may or may not agree with. So there's something interesting going on here, though. By giving agency to the writer, they control that entire framework, which is certainly empowering to them. I think the argument on the other side would be, the journalist feels that they're bringing a third-party distance, an objective view that can bring together disparate points of view within a factual context, which might be missing in some of this work. So I think that's probably a tension. Laura Castaneda, as a longtime journalist, I'm sure you think about these things every day. you know, what are your thoughts about like this end of the journalism world, finding people's voices, giving voice to people, versus the work you did for years as a reporter, framing up people's stories in your case, broadcast television?
Well, there's a big, big difference to be able to speak to somebody, get a quote, you know, or encourage them to write a commentary or a piece like this, than putting a camera in their face, convincing them that, you know, it's all cool. Just let me put this camera in your face. It's very intimidating, right? It's a different ballgame. But I think the beauty of this is that, you know, and is that it's their voice. It's there however long they want it to be. And we always tell them there'll be light editing, but we're not trying to change what you're saying. We're just editing for grammar and for AP style. And it's trust. It's building trust with some of these folks that they are actually being invited to the table, which they're not used to. They're not used to that. And back in the day when I first got here, you know, I was a stranger in this land and in the Southwest. And so I had to really start from the bottom and build trust before you could build your Rolodex, if you will, your contact list and your phone as a reporter. People are not just going to open the door and let you in, whether you're on television or not, or whether you have a great byline or you've been here for a long time. So it's really building that trust and assuring them that you are interested in letting them have this platform. We have invited people into this circle and this Community Voices Project that were hesitant at the beginning. You know, I think Luis Cruz, my colleague, can attest to that. Inviting people from the LGBT community or the trans community and assuring them that we're, you know, we really do want to hear what you have to say. Inviting people across the border that live in Tijuana and saying, you know, you're part of this community in this region. So it's really building the trust, inviting them, encouraging them to write. It sounds real easy at the beginning. We want you to write. We want to invite you. Just write as often as you can. But people are busy, and we've had to go back on this cycle as we're getting ready to extend more invitations, go back to probably a dozen people who haven't written in a very long time and say, you know, are you still interested in being a part of it? It's not that they're not. I think just people get really busy. And when someone initially invites you to be a part of something, it sounds so great and you want to be a part of it. But then you realize that it does take a lot of time to do that. So I hope I didn't veer off too much to answer your question.
No, I think that's a terrific answer. And you know, I will say, as the editor and publisher of the Union Tribune, the legacy of whose voices are heard in our report is very deeply imprinted in the community. And, you know, I know this both objectively from audits we've done of our work, who are our sources, who is quoted in stories in our report. And then historically, the reputation of who the Union Tribune as a institution has valued and prioritized is pretty powerfully imprinted in this community. And I want to commend both of you for the amazing work that you've done in trying to change that, or in doing more than trying, in changing that. So I think it's really important work you're both doing. Laura Sokolow, I wanted to give you the final question here. You always get the hardest question in these podcasts. As the managing editor, this issue of whose voice is heard is something that obviously is not just seen in the editorial pages or in the Community Voices Project every day. It's seen in every story we do. And, you know, it's a pretty consequential one, because I think that there are voices that should not be heard for all sorts of reasons. And that leaves a lot of power and discretion to the individual journalist. How do we guide our journalists at the Union Tribune about who should be in their stories?
Well, as Matt and Laura were both talking, I was thinking, you know, fundamentally in both parts of our work, it comes down to who we know. Our sources are the people that we know and that we talk with and that we've built relationships with. And it was interesting, as Matt was talking about the criteria, I was thinking how historically different it has been on the news side. And Matt was saying, you know, their criteria for who is included is exceptionally broad, and they're not looking to check boxes. And traditionally, that has been the opposite on the news side. The aperture is very narrow, and we are looking to check boxes. We're looking for particular people, often with particular expertise, to talk on an issue. And I think one of the guides that we have given folks is to think more broadly about who is an expert, who is an expert on a particular issue or policy or topic in our community. And also to think about who is most affected by whatever it is that we're writing about. And as you mentioned, we several years ago did an audit, and that audit of our sources, I think, was revealing in some surprising and not so surprising ways, but it was overwhelmingly showing that our sources tend to be the establishment. And the establishment, by definition, was white males of a certain age. And I think whether we're looking for experts in government or academia or the medical field, you know, reporters have traditionally gone to the folks that they know or that are willing to, you know, talk to them at the drop of a hat. And that has really limited the diversity of our sources over time. So I think, you know, there's important work being done to encourage people to spend the time in the community, building those relationships, as Laura was just saying, building that trust over time, so that we have a large, very diverse source list that's helping to inform our work.
Yeah, good answer to a very difficult question. You know, I was just looking on our website at our own criteria around sources, and what we've listed here are some of those boxes that we're checking that you're talking about. Who do we include among the criteria we consider when evaluating a group or individual are authority, knowledge, relevance, endorsement or referral from reputable trusted sources, and credibility. Tests for credibility would include membership of the group, tradition, academic standing, political influence, honesty, and integrity. So I guess some pretty big words there. And who we leave out, I mentioned that not all voices need to be heard. So lack of veracity, people who misguide or lie, we don't want them in our stories. I don't think that's helpful. Lack of transparency, in other words, cloaking a hidden interest or self-interest, bigotry, law-breaking or hate speech. So pretty big topic, you know. And another one that just came up in a story we were talking about recently, there's a sort of an inverse way that you can put your finger on the scale in a story by including a very poor spokesman for one of the points of view, right? So find a outlandish or discredited character and have them be the voice for the unpopular point of view to make it an object of scorn. That's another way that sources can be misused. So very complicated business, probably more podcasts to come on this topic. But with that, I think we should wrap it up.
Let's actually jump in with a really quick real-world example. One of the things that this discussion has been great. I appreciate discussing this issue, but we didn't really give a real-world example. And I will say in Sunday's Union Tribune and in Monday's Union Tribune, we're publishing 8 essays from Community Voices Project members about homelessness. Now, we've all heard a lot about homelessness policy in recent years, but these essays are really great because they, to the point of this discussion, are really diverse. One person spent time in a homeless shelter in North County. A sophomore, high school sophomore, went to talk to homeless people in Chula Vista. And there's geographic diversity, there's political diversity. There's a progressive and a conservative viewpoint. And these essays collectively are really powerful. And I hope they do make people think on a subject that we've, you know, talked about so much that sometimes our eyes can glaze over as we're having these complicated discussions about homelessness policy. But I think, you know, as readers want a real world example about what we're talking about, those eight essays, I think, go a long way to underscoring that.
Yeah, and Jeff, no, that's
terrific. I just wanted to add one thing. I don't want our audience, our readers, to be confused. We still accept regular commentary from anybody who wants to submit it. So this is not saying, oh, no, your commentary is not welcome. This is just a special project that the Union Tribune has very proudly launched and is ongoing. So please don't confuse. You know, we will gladly still receive your non-solicited commentaries.
Okay, excellent. Luis?
Thank you very much, Jeff, Laura, Laura, and Matt. To learn more about our Community Voices project, log on to sandiegouniontribune.com/community-voices-project. That does it for this edition of The Backstory for everyone at the San Diego Union Tribune. Thank you very much for listening and for supporting local journalism. Have a great day, everybody.